The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya podcast.
So do you believe that Trump should be the president again? Or
I think he's what's needed. I mean, I like Ron DeSantis, and I don't have anything really critical to say about him. But Trump is tested. Nobody in human history has been attacked as much as Trump, and unfairly. So I think that he's going to be the standard bearer. I just think that people won't say, you know, people are cautious about what they say. It's tragic. Our country, you know, has come to that. I remember being a kid and saying, you know, America's a free country. I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
No more.
You
can say it, but you get punished.
Yeah, well, that's precisely, I don't know how much you know about me, Mr. Horowitz, but I quit my job covering the NFL because I saw this happening to really good people, like that had no malintent, who maybe questioned COVID, you know, its origins or its treatment, or do we really need to keep kids out of school? And they were silenced. They were punished. Some lost their jobs, you know, canceled, you name it. Now,
it's terrible.
It's been awful. How much of a snapback do you see coming? I mean, you said you think the tide is turning.
In the early stages of a fascist state.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the treatment, you know, putting Peter Navarro, a presidential advisor, in leg irons because he had a constitutional issue with the January 6th committee, or the way they concocted Biden and Hakeem Jeffries, and they all have the same line. Within the last few weeks, it said that 5 Capitol police officers were killed by the protesters.
Yeah,
it's a total lie.
It's a lie. It is a lie.
It's not a minor thing. It's a total lie. Yeah. The number is zero.
Yeah.
And they staged this mock funeral. Well, they didn't call it mock, but a mock, you know, funeral in the Capitol Rotunda for Brian Sicknick for losing his life at the hands of protesters during January 6th so-called riot. Sicknick died in his bed from natural causes, and he was an ardent Trump supporter, as was Ashley Babbitt. You know, they're all complicit in the murder of Ashley Babbitt. It's all on video, for crying out tears. And Nancy Pelosi is the prime culprit. She covered up the identity. Michael Byrd is the killer. And, you know, rewarded him, freed him, gave him a medal for defending the Capitol. That's an accomplice to murder. No charges. No trial.
Yeah.
That's the future. You can't count on the Democrats to have a smidgen of morality or principle. That's the most frightening thing.
How did we get here? It's astonishing to me. And look, we've had a...
I'll tell you exactly where.
Okay, tell me how we got here.
In 1968, Tom Hayden organized a riot at the Democrat convention to destroy the electoral chances of Vice President Hubert Humphrey, who was the nominee of the Democrat Party, or about to be the nominee of the Democrat Party. And he did it, and the people who were in the riot did it because Hubert Humphrey was an anti-communist. And then Hayden and Jane Fonda led the left into the Democrat Party. I remember this very well because I was horrified. I was a radical, and so were they. So they should have seen the Democrat Party as the enemy. But they infiltrated the party, formed these caucuses like the Black Caucus, which is a Louis Farrakhan caucus, by the way, a bunch of racists. And they took over the next 50 years, they took over the Democrat Party. But Barack Obama was one of them. He was raised by communists, and actually his mentor was a Soviet agent. I know all of this sounds like tinfoil hat stuff, but actually it isn't. It's reality. I mean, you know, anyway, I'm not going to defend my tinfoil hat.
No, you don't need
there.
To.
I knew these people. I knew Hayden. Hayden said to me, when there was a piece of land that was owned by the university in Berkeley, and the left took it over and called it People's Park.
Been there many times.
And the cops came to evict them because it was supposed to be for dormitories. And I was standing there with Hayden when the tear gas began flying. And I was worried that somebody did get killed, that somebody would get hurt. I was such a deviant early on. And Tom saw my fear and he said, David, what we have to do is we have to lure middle-class kids into situations when the cops will crack their heads and that will make them radical. That's the mentality.
What he said to you.
That's an exact quote. It's inscribed in my mind. We have to get middle-class kids. We have to lure them into situations where the police will crack their heads and make them radicals. He was a very bad man, Tom Hayden. And who gave him? Clinton gave him the Medal of Freedom. it happened over a 50-year period.
Yeah, yeah.
And Republicans did not pay attention.
Did they not pay attention, or were they afraid to push back because of, you know, the Democrats?
They were called racists.
Say it again?
It's very effective.
They were called racists, yes.
Calling people racists.
Yeah.
Very effective.
Yeah. Is it as effective now, David, as it was?
No.
No.
No, they've worn it out.
Yeah, well.
Look, people forget this about Trump. And that is, in the history of the United States, no incumbent president before Trump got more votes than running for the second term, and that includes Obama. Trump got 11 million more votes in a rigged election than rigged by the Democrats the second time.
Can we drill down on that?
75 million people have withstood the propaganda.
Yes, and the other side, the Democrats, will tell you, well, Biden got more. So can I drill down on that with you for a minute? Tell me why you believe the election was rigged. I want to know from your point of view.
Here's what I say in my book, Final Battle.
Final Battle, folks. You can find it.
People ask the wrong question, which is the one you just asked.
Okay.
Was the election rigged? Nobody knows, because there never was an audit of the vote. There's no evidence one way or the other that's conclusive. So when I say the election's rigged, it's just my opinion.
Okay.
The Democrats' response is you're a traitor to democracy, which shows you how guilty they are. I mean, you can't suppress dissent in this country without destroying the country. Mm-hmm. In July 2020, 7 months or so before the election, the Democrats sent out a task force consisting of 600 lawyers and 10,000 volunteers to change the election rules in battleground states.
Right.
And to do it often illegally, as they did in Pennsylvania, which was a vital swing state. According to the Constitution, it's in the Constitution that the state legislatures set the election rules. Mm-hmm. But in Pennsylvania, they went and got the Supreme Court, which was dominated by Democrats, to set the election rules. And, you know, there's been several books. Dinesh D'Souza wrote a book. Molly Hemingway wrote a book, and there's other books that document how they rigged the election rules so the Democrats won those states. And people forget this was the tiniest margin in the history of presidential elections. Mm-hmm. It was settled, as it were, by 42,000 votes out of 159 million votes. Joe Biden won by 0.027% of the vote. And then look at the way they ran the country, as though they had a landslide.
Yes.
They hate America, and they hate the Constitution they regard as a white supremacist document. It's insane. The word white doesn't appear in the Constitution, nor does the word black.
Yeah.
And there were 500,000 free blacks on the eve of the Civil War. It's not a white supremacist document. There couldn't be 500,000 free blacks if that were the case.
So why?
And all the blacks who were enslaved, or like the vast majority, were enslaved by black Africans and sold at slave auctions. So the bottom line is that black people enslaved black people and white people at enormous sacrifice, 360,000 dead, freed blacks. So, you know, I mean, if they want reparations, these radical extortionists, they should sue the Confederacy, not the government that sacrificed 360,000 lives. This is unprecedented in the history of the planet that one race would make such a sacrifice to free another.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So why then do, as you put it, do Biden and the Democrats hate America? What is there to
hate? They're communists.
What do they want? Just power?
They want everybody to be equal when everybody is obviously not equal. I mean, if you think you're equal, try duplicating what Steph Curry does on a basketball court, which is why he's rich and we're not.
I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I constantly say life isn't fair. If it were fair, we'd all look the same. We'd all have the same talents, but we don't.
It's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. The book is Final Battle. The next election could be the last. I realize, forgive me, you want to sell books, but at the same time, you know, when someone says to you, if I were to ask you, do you really believe we're on the cusp of a civil war, really?
No, the federal government is way too big for there to be a civil war.
Okay.
Nobody on the right should be talking about seceding from the union. That's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
This is America. We have to fight for it and win it or lose it. It's that simple.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think you're referring to Marjorie Taylor Greene for saying, you know, we need a national divorce and the red states and the blue states.
That's a little off.
You know, just as she gives the right a bad name, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Cory Bush and Ilhan Omar.
I call it the Nazi caucus.
The Nazi
caucus. They're all Jew haters.
But what they do, in my estimation, is they hide behind the virtue signaling of Black Lives Matter and, you know, women.
A criminal organization, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And petty, low-class criminals They're the kind of people who steal from the collection plate at churches on Sundays. That's their mentality. Raise money for Black people and put it in your pocket.
Yeah, or buy some nice real estate and drink champagne. I do want to get into one other subject with you before I let you go, and that is the 1619 Project, again, focusing on this area of race.
They weren't slaves. First of all, they weren't Americans. America was born with the Declaration of Independence, which was 180 some odd years after 1619.
Right.
They were English colonists, which is different. We fought a revolutionary war based on the proposition that all men are not only created equal, but have a God-given right to liberty. Mm-hmm. That's America. Mm-hmm. The woman who devised this, Nicole Hannah Jones, is a raving racist. I mean, she said the ugliest things about white people as a whole, as a group. The alleged slaves that were shipped to Virginia, first of all, Virginia didn't have slavery in 1619. Secondly, the labor force was mainly indentured servants, and these were indentured servants. And where do I learn this? In an essay by Nell Painter, who is a Black left-wing Princeton historian and a premier historian. She's very, very accomplished, very respected. That's where you can learn the truth about this. This is just an attempt to smear white America. Every totalitarian movement has a scapegoat race. And it's the way the Nazis used the Jews, only the Jews didn't have the resources that white people have. So we've got a battle on our hands, but we have to win it. Or it's unbelievable, the Ku Klux Klan type racism that the Democrat Party represents today. Just unbelievable.
And yet they sell themselves as the party of, you know,
because Republicans are tongue-tied. What's the matter with them?
Well, they're afraid to be called racist and homophobes and xenophobes and transphobic and all the rest.
Just insanity.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the battle we have to fight.
And your key to winning that battle is?
Is speaking up. There's the Trump movement, which is patriotic. There's the revolt of the parents in the schools, which is really important. There's the revolt of the comedians, which is also really important. Yeah. And people, you know, America is not Weimar Germany, which is where Hitler won. He was actually elected. He got the chancellorship. America is a very individualistic country. We had a frontier. People don't take guff from the government if they can help it. They're very skeptical of government. So I think, you know, I'm a cockeyed optimist. I mean, you're born an optimist or a pessimist. It's just in you. But I think we have a fighting chance. I don't doubt it for a second. If you go up on the internet and you see all these reaction videos, and there's all these Black guys who look, you know, they're all wearing baseball caps, and it's not your suit crowd. And they see right through the race baloney, right through it. It's just, it's very refreshing.
Yeah, it is. And I've had a number of those people on my podcast because I want to elevate their voices. Even if I get one extra viewer to them, I feel accomplished.
Well, I feel privileged to be on your show.
It's been the privilege and the honor have been mine. David Horowitz, thank you so much, folks. Again, the book is called Final Battle. The Next Election Could Be the Last by David Horowitz. I mean, why not buy all of his books? He makes so much sense, and he raises so many issues, and he's seen both sides. Liz Wheeler, welcome. It's so good to finally meet you. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to talk to you about all that you do. You're the host of the Liz Wheeler podcast, and you have a new book. This is your second book. I know you're not going to want to spill all because you've got books to sell, but this is interesting. First, I want to remind people what Marxism is, because I think this gets lost. I'm just looking at a random Google definition. Marxism is a method of socioeconomic analysis that uses a materialist interpretation of historical development, better known as historical materialism, to understand class relations and social conflict, and a dialectical perspective to view social transformation. So, we've got capitalism. We are a democratic republic and a capitalist society. And apparently there are enough people that are, I guess, in places of power that don't think this is good, that would prefer a Marxist society. Why in the hell would they want that when we are the freest place on earth?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is one of the most common questions or reactions that I've gotten so far to this book. Is people are like, Marxists? Really? Are we talking about like Karl Marx, the Communist Manifesto? Mm-hmm. How is that kind of Marxism the same as what we're facing in school? And this is a completely valid question, because let's be honest, conservatives and Republicans have used the term Marxist as an empty ad hominem on cable news airwaves for quite some time now. But the way I explain it is this. Back when Marxism came into being, when Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, the way that he presented this to the world was that the ruling class was oppressing the working class. The working class should therefore revolt against the ruling class and thus usher in communism. That in and of itself was not a very successful theory. It didn't catch fire and spark this global transformation like Karl Marx wanted. It kind of died out in the 20th century. Some countries tried it, but by and large, it didn't work. So it was dormant. It had been rejected. But then we have this Marxist from Italy by the name of Antonio Gramsci. He was one of the founders of the Italian Communist Party, and he revived Karl Marx's Marxism, his economic Marxism, and transformed it into what we know as cultural Marxism. Gramsci recognized that Karl Marx's theory wasn't going to work, that the working class was never going to overthrow the ruling class as long as the working class relied on the institutions of the civil institutions, the cultural institutions of the ruling class. So Gramsci proposed an alternative. He said what we should do is we should target the cultural institutions first. We should destabilize civil society in order to then topple the economic system and the system of government. And Michelle, that is what we're seeing today. Word for word, Gramsci was the one who named, among other institutions, the media, the education system, religion, the law, and the nuclear family as civil institutions that must first be destroyed before we can have the economic revolution.
Okay. So I'm wondering what they think the economic revolution is going to help, because as we've seen with communism in the past, it's killed more people than it's helped. We've seen that under Mao Zedong. We've seen communism at work, and it's not good. So this is where I get lost. I don't understand why anyone would suggest that this is the better economic way to live.
Well, there's two categories of people here. There's the category of people that I would call the water carriers. This is maybe your average leftist who doesn't realize that they are taking part in Marxist ideology. They are duped because one of Marxism's favorite tactics is to redefine words. So you can take DEI for an example.
Yeah.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion, those are words that have a positive connotation to us. We think diversity of thought. Equity is equality. Inclusion is tolerance for other people's viewpoints. But what the Marxists have done is they've redefined those words. Diversity now is just tokenism. It's racism. Mm-hmm. Equity is socialism. It's redistribution of outcome. Inclusion isn't inclusion at all. It's essentially religious persecution. They redefine these words, and then people fall for it. People fall prey to the lies that they've been told by Marxists. That's the vast majority of the Democratic electorate. Most Democrats are not Marxists. It's the leaders of these movements that are Marxists. And the leaders of the movement are twofold. They either think that communism has never been tried correctly, that they somehow are different than every other communist in the history of the world, and that if they try it, it will work. Or you have the people that realize that it won't work, They don't care that you and I would be oppressed by communism, and they just want to collect wealth and power from oppressing people under a communist society. So it's not that the average leftist is like, Marxism, let's try it. This is great. History be damned. It's that they don't realize what they're buying into.
Okay. Well, and we do see it, you know, I've seen it even before. Like you said, the silver lining of COVID was that we saw what our kids were being taught. We saw what the teachers' unions were demanding. We saw people like Randy Weingarten really showing her true colors about what it was she was trying to achieve, which is not educating our children properly. It was indoctrinating them, for lack of a better term. Now, I get pushback from certain people a lot of the time, say, oh, you're cherry picking examples. But I think the evidence is becoming overwhelming. Even before COVID, I would take my kids to see some movies. And it was so clear to me that there were political undertones to these films that were trying to teach kids that, you know, you can be anything you want to be. You can be an elephant if you want to be. You know, there, I remember that scene in a movie. Another scene where all the black wolves were being caged. Okay. Only the black wolves were being caged in this animated film. And I was just sitting there with my family shaking my head, and I didn't want to bring it up because my husband hates talking politics. But I was going, the messages are so clear to me, and I wonder how they're impacting my kids. But I think this stuff has been going on for years, and that we've just sort of, I don't know why we've been in denial of it. Maybe we think the intentions are good. Why hasn't the pushback started until now?
Well, let me tell you an anecdote that I talk about in my book about Randy Weingarten first, because she's an incredibly powerful political player on the left. An incredibly powerful. She's a Democrat kingmaker, a Democrat politician kingmaker, essentially. She endorsed a woman by the name of Emily Drabinsky for president of the American Library Association. Now, the president of the American Library Association is incredibly powerful in choosing which books are in libraries, even in your own neighborhood, in the children's section in your own neighborhood. This woman is essentially in charge of picking that. Emily Drabinsky is a self-avowed Marxist. When she won election to be the president of the American Library Association, she tweeted, "How is it that a lesbian Marxist could obtain this position? I'm so proud. Mom, you would be so proud of me." Randy Weingarten endorsed this woman. These people, if you look close enough, they admit their ideology in their own words. It's not hidden. It's not an inference that I'm making. And once you see this, you can't unsee this. It's right there.
Is this woman still in power?
She is. She is still in power. And let me go back to your other question too, is how did we allow the capture of our institutions? How has this been happening for decades and Republicans were seemingly caught unaware? Part of my book is a critique of the current Republican Party, the current Republican establishment, because they are to blame, and the conservative movement as a whole is to blame for allowing this to happen. We were incredibly naive as a movement. We were incredibly complacent. We had our heads buried in the sand as this happened. And it wasn't just because we personally didn't believe that Marxism would try to creep into our nation. It wasn't that sort of naivete. It's because Republicans forgot what our government was intended to do. This is the part where I differ quite significantly from the Republican Party. When the Republican Party looks at the role of government in society, they've taken more of a libertarian view, that the purpose of government is simply to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and to keep everyone as absolutely free as they possibly can. Like, stay off my lawn. Government won't tell you what to do as long as you're not violating someone else's inherent God-given right. That is actually not the correct definition of freedom and of liberty. So one of the questions that I explore is freedom the ultimate end? Is it the ultimate goal? Or is freedom the means to something greater? It's really important that, and I challenge Republicans to grapple with this question, because if the answer is freedom is the ultimate goal, then things like drag queen story hour, where grown men are dressed as sexualized versions of women gyrating in front of children, that would have to be inherently moral because they have the freedom to do that. Yet you and I sitting here, and every parent listening to this knows that that's not moral. That's immoral. It's wrong. It's grotesque. So if something doesn't jive there, then we have to say, well, maybe the ultimate end of freedom, maybe freedom isn't the ultimate end. Maybe freedom is the means to something greater. And I make the argument that the means to something greater is an ordered society, a society ordered on justice. And as it turns out, this is not a new idea that I'm presenting. This is actually our constitutional heritage. Our constitutional heritage is not to a libertarian nation. It's to a nation that pursues order through the acknowledgement of natural law. And I know when I say natural law, some people are going to say, well, are you talking about religion? Are you talking about a theocracy? And yes, I'm talking about religion. And no, I'm not talking about a theocracy. Acknowledging natural law has nothing to do with whether you're a practicing Christian, practicing Jew, practicing Muslim, whatever. You don't have to do that in our country, as we all know. But our nation was built on a shared acknowledgement of what the definition of right, of wrong, of liberty, and of justice is. And if we don't, as a nation, acknowledge that those words have a definition, then we will descend into the chaos that we're experiencing today.
How much success can we have? I feel sometimes like the toothpaste is out of the tube and there's no going back. I don't like to think that way. And I do this job because I do believe that we have to fight back. But how are we going to do it? What do we need to do?
So I got into a little squabble with my editor when I was putting together my manuscript, because the last chapter in my book, it's chapter 12, he told me was intimidating for a president of the United States, let alone flustered parents across the country. And I said, I don't care. We've heard all these platitudes from Republican officials, elected politicians, as well as people that are supposed to be conservative thought leaders, all these platitudes on how, you know, this problem will solve itself if we just properly order our personal lives, if we just pray, if we just, you know, if we just make sure that at home everything's good. And I'm not knocking that. That's true that that's important. But what I do in chapter 12 is I offer 12 concrete steps. They're not easy. They are intimidating. They're not always things that we as individuals can do ourselves, but they're things that we can use the government to do to eradicate this poison, whether it's critical race theory, transgender ideology, the technocracy of the experts that we all encountered during COVID, moral relativism, your truth, my truth versus the truth. There are things that we have the just authority to use government to do to get rid of that, to fight back against woke corporations. So I made a blueprint for any politician to take action on, and for individual citizens like you and me and everyone watching this to pressure our politicians to do. Remember, they work for us. We are their boss. Yes. And it's time that we got some action from them.
Absolutely. That cannot be overstated. They work for us. We elect them. We pay their salaries. And the fact that people put them on such pedestals sometimes really bothers me. They should be putting us on the pedestals. We are the citizens. We are the people in this country who generate taxes. And we elected you to go represent us. We didn't do that to put you on this pedestal and say, oh, we worship you. No, go represent us. Do what we ask. Do what we demand. Listen to us. So I love that idea. This is so interesting. HideYourChildrenBook.com. You can learn more about this book. It's quite something. I think you raised some really interesting points, Liz, and it's great to finally meet you and have you on the show. And I hope we can do it again. And all the best with the book. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show. It was really fun.
Yep. Right back at you. She is Liz Wheeler. The book is Hide Your Children. You can find it at hideyourchildrenbook.com. I'm Michelle Tafoya. As always, be brave, as clearly Liz is, and do good. And we'll see you next time.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.